the British population as British, has Britain as a country made mistakes in the past? Yeah, it has. Let's own them. Let's learn from them, move on. Was slavery a terrible idea? Fuck, it was a terrible idea. It was horrible. We learned lesson. We moved on. You know, and I think that this forgiveness, but and also the acceptance that we all make mistakes is absolutely crucial for a healthy society. And we've gone to this thing now of, well, the one, the guilty until proven innocent. That is a, like, you can't have a healthy society with that. You can't have a healthy society where you always suspect the worst motives of somebody. And you can't have a healthy society where you're pitting groups of people against each other and saying, all men are after this, or all white people are after this, or all black people think this way. It's fucking ridiculous. You know, like, we can't have a healthy society that way.
Welcome to the show. I'm Joe Horton. On the Guild of Dad show, we unwrap weekly the incredible stories, skills, and expertise of the world's most captivating dads and experts, along with topics and stories that will captivate you and impact your life. If you are an existing listener, thanks for supporting the show. I love that your ongoing support is really pushing me forward and motivating me to make this show better on a weekly basis. If you're a new listener, thanks for discovering us, and hopefully some of these conversations resonate. I would advise you to go back and check through some of the other fantastic guests that we've had on in the last little while. I appreciate you guys tuning in and getting behind the podcast. It spurs me on, motivates me, and inspires me to forge ahead with what I'm doing at Guild of Dads and help as many dads as I can through the conversations we have. And it does make an impact. I get feedback from some of you guys and some of the guys that are on the Facebook group and have reached out to me on Instagram and Facebook. So I appreciate you reaching out and telling me how these conversations are impacting you. We speak to fascinating individuals, best-selling authors, entrepreneurs, and ultra athletes, professors, anthropologists, and also some ordinary dads just like you doing some extraordinary and impactful things. So what happens on Guild of Dads? I want to have conversations with men, dads, and experts to transfer practical knowledge, insight, and experience that you can apply to improve your physical health, mental health, relationships, career, and the way you show up in the world as a role model to the next generation. These are important conversations to have right now because the world is shifting so fast, and getting clarity on this stuff means you can make an impact on yourself and those around you. This episode is about how to be proud of who you are, and specifically the way you can do this in a world of shoulds and musts right now. This is challenging for all of us, and it creates its own challenges both within our intimate relationships and in the wider world. People are scared of saying the wrong thing, specifically men and dads right now, and this needs to be spoken about both in intimate relationships and the wider world. We delve into why lockdown and the pandemic has made people even more polarized in terms of what they can say and what they can't say. So today, I speak to best-selling author, host of the Veteran State of Mind podcast, and Iraq and Afghanistan vet, Geraint Jones. Now, Geraint has spent some time in some of the most hostile war zones on Earth and written about his experience on returning and the effect it had on his mental health. We dive into Geraint's influences, how he likes to start and finish his day, the role of parents in our upbringing, and why we as men need to start confronting this notion that we are intrinsically bad. We get deep into his values, his views on relationships, and why making mistakes and forgiveness is a key part of being a human being and functioning within society. Now, if you ever wonder how some of my amazing guests get to where they are in life, the athletes, the entrepreneurs, those making a massive impact on the world, I can tell you that pretty much all of them follow a very deliberate plan or system of some kind. This is exactly what I do too, and I'm revealing how you can implement a plan and system in your own life completely free in my ebook, The Dad Blueprint, over at guildofdads.com/dad, and that's dad in capital letters. Incidentally, many of the people I interview on this show will be leveraging the power of similar systems to radically level up their lives and transform into the men and dads they always wanted to be. So you will be in amazing company. And now to my conversation with Geraint Jones. Geraint, welcome to the Guild of Dads podcast.
Hey, thank you for the invite. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, likewise, likewise. It's been an interesting introduction between us two. I've been following you for a little while, and I've been listening to your podcast a little bit, and it's a good thing to have you on speaking to us tonight, because you're a fascinating character, and I've not ever spoken to someone who is a Iraq vet, an Afghanistan vet, a podcaster, a DJ, an author. I don't know if a cat owner as well, you know. So
cat dad, mate. Come on. That's why I'm on the Guild of Dads, cat dad.
So welcome aboard, sir.
Cheers, mate. We were just talking about, you know, kids, and I don't have any, you know, human ones. And I was just saying to you then, like, I don't know if I'd be able to do it if I did have kids. Like, I'm interested to know more about from the dad side of things, because I don't really know much about kids. It's one of my weaknesses when I write, to be honest. When I have to do a child character, I have no idea. Well, can I swear on this podcast, by the way?
Yeah, of course you can. I'll just mark it as explicit when I put it out.
So I don't really know that much about kids, but one thing that I do know about them is that they take up a lot of time.
Yeah,
and so I take my hat off to anyone that can be a productive member of society who also has kids.
Well, yeah, it's always a tricky one. I mean, I've heard you talk about before, you know, the amount of work that goes into a podcast, and so my podcasts are an hour long. They, with the bit before and the bit after, plus all the other odds and sods, you're probably getting on for 3 or 4 hours out of your day. So that's a kind of, to people that sort of think, oh yeah, I'm going to start a podcast.
Yeah.
It does take quite some time to put out a podcast if it's an hour or so long or whatever. So I generally, you know, I get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and I work on Guild of Dads before my kids get up. So I do a couple of hours. They'll generally kind of wander through this door at about 7 o'clock. And then in the evenings, I do a couple of hours more, and I have a day job. So I have kids and a day job, and I do the podcast on top of that. And I run a dad's brotherhood on top of that as well. So to give you an example of why my hair looks a little bit white and gray these days, that's the reason why.
Looks immaculate though, mate. Look, absolutely immaculate. You know what though? It's just like, I was listening to a great podcast, and someone that's like really kind of helped me over the years. I know, because you were talking about Ryan Mickler earlier, and I'd say for your Ryan Mickler, for me is Andy Frisella. Like, Andy's been like really kind of like a big force in my life in the last few years, and you know, he was doing a podcast the other day with Tim Grover, who is someone that I also kind of look up to. I think his book, I hope like his new book, Winning, will be out soon. I'll see, I'm coming on here now. I'm promoting other people's books instead of his book Relentless is just brilliant. And Andy Frisella was saying that, he was just saying like, I don't understand what people do with their day. Like, if you're not productive, I don't. And that's, to be honest with me, it's kind of how I feel about like things. Cause I feel like I have a lot. I a lot of my day is chilling out in one way or another. Like, you know, I don't count working out as work. Like, that to me is fun. And like, cause it's funny actually, cause you mentioned Steve Pressfield earlier, and I want to big him up too, because he's just been a great guy to both of us. And one of the things he said to me was like, he's like, yeah, I go and work out first thing in the morning. So that I know that I've already accomplished the hardest part of my day. Now, my thing is the opposite. I put work out at the back of a day because I have to earn it. I don't get to work out until I've done my work, which, you know, and writing is work. Podcasting is work. It's really enjoyable work, you know, but it's still work. So my workout is at the back of the day. But yeah, like Andy was saying, I was like, I don't get how people, like, I'm like, what do you, you do have 24 hours in the day. Where the hell is it going? Like, I don't understand why anyone would not want to be productive either. That's the thing. It's not so much, I'm not like a Soviet commissar and I've got my clipboard out and I'm like, right, I want you to make so many of these nuts and bolts in an hour. But in the culture that we're living in, with the access to information that we've got, you know, surely at this point, like, there's so many ways that you can be creative in whatever way you want to be. So many ways you can be productive. I don't understand why people don't want to go to that. And to bring it back to the dads thing, one of the things I started to really think over the last year is so much of it depends on your parents. If you get good parents, if you get dealt, if like in the game of life, if you get dealt a hand which has good parents, then I think that that's just, you have got such an advantage over a lot of humanity. Because I don't think that many people are probably that good parents. Doesn't mean they're not loving parents, but you know, do they encourage you to learn? Do they encourage you to win? You know, do they encourage you to travel? All these things. And if you get that in parents, you're probably going to have a productive life, which positively impacts other people. And if you get dealt shit parents, it's going to be a challenge. My cat's just come in. My cat always comes in at this point of the podcast. And then I have to make
a cameo appearance.
Yeah, she's going to be charging me for that. It's one of those ones now, like something that I look back, like I feel like really appreciative of, you know, of my parents. But that being said, you know, I know plenty of guys, especially from the army as well, who got dealt a very bad hand in parenting, who have turned out to be great guys. So I don't think it determines things, but it certainly gives you a leg up.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is as well, is I talk about a lot about the fact that I think that guys are like, whether you're a dad or whether you're or not a dad, I think kind of men and dads are at like a kind of crossroads in history at the moment. And the our lives are very similar to our parents, but they're also very different in a number of respects. And the kind of the shift that we've seen in the last little while around kind of masculinity and how topical it is, and you know, and I think that men are kind of quite lost at the minute in some respects, because they're not living the same life as their kind of their dads or their granddads were. And typically their granddads would have been doing kind of physical or manual jobs, and there would have been some, you know, there'd have been the kind of strong kind of archetypal masculine figure there, but there were also kind of a lot of kind of negative things, like, you know, gambling and like heavy drinking and womanizing and all this kind of stuff, and that, which still does go on.
Did you say negative? All that stuff sounds a lot of fun, mate.
Well, I don't know how to
I've got a while, mate. That sounds like a fun weekend. You know,
From like a role model point of view, like if you're role modeling behavior to your kids.
But this is an interesting one, because I don't think that like the occasional heavy drinking necessarily needs to be a detrimental role model. Like, I don't think that if your dad is a loving dad that educates you and stuff. Now, it's one thing to break the trust of a marriage because you're teaching your kid to be a liar, you're teaching him to disrespect people. But if your dad and your mum aren't together, you know, and your dad, like, because, like, if your dad's a bit of a horn dog and he dates a lot of women and stuff, that's not necessarily a bad thing if he treats them with respect. And if he treats people, like, you know, because one of the things, like over the last few years, I've started to kind of question more is this idea that we have of, right, relationships have to be man, woman, forever, for the rest of their life. And if they're not, then we class it as a failure. Because, you know, I've come through this, like, enough cycles in my life now that I have some friends from high school, but most of my friends from high school are no longer my friends. Most of my friends from rugby are no longer my friends. Most of my friends from uni are no longer my friends. The people I served with in Afghanistan. Now, from each one of those groups, I've kept a few people as I go along, but generally friends kind of fall away, and you don't look at it and go, friendship was a failure. It was fucking great at the time. But why do we look at relationships and go, that relationship failed? Well, did it? Well, because it might have been, you know, it might have been a really happy time. It might have had great times together, but as you've grown, you've gone one way, they've gone the other. That to me is not a failure. Now, what is a failure is if somebody cheats, if somebody lies, if somebody manipulates, that is failure of your character. But it's not a failure to go in different directions. And I think the way that we like look at that as a society is massively damaging, because then you have parents staying together because we don't want to be failures. We don't want to hurt the kids. Like, you know, as much as I love my parents, they stayed together for the kids was fucking disastrous. Absolutely disastrous. But they did it for the right reasons, so I never hold it against them. They thought they were doing the right thing. But if you're listening to this and you think that you're staying together for the kids is a good thing, I'll tell you right now, it's fucking not. Get out of there. But, you know, I kind of digressing a bit here, but my point is, that to me would be more damaging than a dad who and a mum who separate and the dad dates many people, you know, like, so there's something to be said for the dad who is just embraces that kind of wild man side and who goes out drinking with the boys and who maybe is known around town as a bit of a wild man. Like, because if that's his authentic self and is that who he is, you know, then I think embracing that and owning that and teaching your kids to be okay with who they are and being a bit of a wild man can be a good thing. And, you know, one of the things I look at a lot is and get asked a lot is, why do you think the rates of like young men committing suicide and or men in general committing suicide is going higher? And I honestly think that it's for the same reasons as we saw very high numbers of suicides in gay men, you know, in like over the last 100 years, because they couldn't be who they were meant to be. And I think that this is what's happening with men now, is men are not allowed to be men. Now, some men don't need what other men need. So the idea of like, you know, we're not all in the same group, and that's fine. Some people don't want to be boisterous. Some people don't want to be combative, you know. But I thought it was very interesting recently where, you know, there was that the lady was murdered down in London, and there was a vigil and everything, and it was national news. And a lot of women were coming out saying, we need men to stand up for us. We need men to do this. And I thought, well, wait a minute. For the last 10 years, we've been told that we're fucking shitbags if we open up a door. Not by all women, because I actually genuinely believe that most women still wanted that level. But by the media, by celebrities, you know, you were a shit, you were a piece of shit if you opened the door for someone, because you think, oh, I can't open the door myself, you know, and all that kind of thing. And it's like, well, we've gone from, you know, we're not supposed to open the door to now, I'm supposed to intervene between you and a stranger. And don't get me wrong, I've never changed from that. That's the way I was brought up. That's the way if I had kids, I would bring them up. If you see a stranger in trouble, you intervene. Simple as that. But I will admit as well that I do enjoy a bit of conflict. So there's a selfish motivation in there as well. I enjoy conflict. But most men, I don't think most men do. I don't think most people, you know, enjoy conflict. And therefore you have to train people and to use this fucking term, I hate this term, but I'm going to use it, normalize confrontation. And you can only do that by embracing those aspects of masculinity that have been quote unquote, you know, toxic. So sorry, man, I got off on a rant there, but I had a really strong tea before we came.
No, that's off. Right. That's right. No, it's an interesting one, because someone asked me recently, you know, they asked me about masculinity, and I said to them, I said, look, I think the problem that you've got, and to your point in terms of kind of suicide and kind of identity crisis, if you like, that men are going through, I think that there is a scale, if you like, and I don't like to use the kind of term alpha and beta, because it makes it sound like kind of strong and weak. But if we say there's a scale of alpha and beta, some guys are naturally going to be up here, and some guys are naturally going to be across here, rather than down here. Let's say across here, okay. But I think for men, I think it's to work out is to align to where they are on that scale, where they naturally are on that scale. Because the problem is I think often you have problems where beta guys are trying to be more alpha, and it just really doesn't fit. It doesn't fit. Or alpha guys are trying to be more beta, it doesn't fit. So we're all trying to kind of work out where we are on this scale, rather than just saying, well, okay, I are naturally more kind of beta, but I have a little bit alpha in these kind of in these areas, or, you know. But I think the problem we've got at the minute is you've got this kind of power vacuum, if you like, whereby guys are trying to work out where they are on this scale. And then at the same time, you've got society going, you should be this, you should show up as this, you should be that. And it's kind of mind blowing. And the kind of toxic soup that you've got going on here at the same time is this aspect of what we spoke about before we came on air, the whole issue of meaning. You know, we in the kind of modern world have been told that if we have these things that life is going to be meaningful. If we have a car, if we have a house, if we have kids, that life all of a sudden becomes meaningful. Problem is that a lot of men and dads are getting to this point in life where they're actually like, well, hang on a minute, I've got all this stuff that I was told that was going to make me happy. Mm-hmm. And I'm fucking miserable. And the problem is society doesn't really have an answer for that other than, we'll go and do something externally, which is going to try and fill that void. And I think that a lot of the discussions I have on here and a lot of discussions I have with people in the world of self-development, philosophy, authors and stuff, it's very much about you need to kind of confront that kind of what I would call the man in the mirror and go on that inner journey inside yourself in order to kind of really work out who you are and what you stand for. And to the whole issue of, you know, the Sarah Everard case, guys are frightened to say what they think because they're scared that if they say what they think, that they're going to be ostracized. And the problem is you've got men walking around literally, you know, with almost like an invisible bit of gaffer tape over their mouth because they're scared to say what they think for fear of being branded a sexist or a monster or a misogynist or whatever and stuff. And it's just crazy because in that whole scenario, we had a number of different issues being conflated together, which were just totally completely separate issues. Yeah. And guys were tearing their hair out thinking, how are we the enemy in this? You know, do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, and that was it, man. So there's a few things there. One of the things I would say is, I think it goes further as well to us just being told that these things will make you happy and then we realize that they don't. Is it actually, like, as well as that happening, we're also told that we're intrinsically bad people for being who we are. So in the same way that gay people before were punished saying, oh, because I'm somebody who believes that you are born gay. That's what I believe. And so if gay people tell me they were born gay, why the fuck would I not believe them? You know? So that's the way I think. And their lives were made miserable and still are for a lot of people. Their lives are still made miserable because they don't get to believe who they are. If a trans person says to me, I believe I'm a man and I'm miserable because I'm in a woman's body, I'm going to believe them. I'm going to support them because I don't want them to live miserably. And as a society, most of us would agree with that. But if you're a man and you say, look, I'm a man and I feel that I need to be this, I need to be allowed to be boisterous with the boys. I want to be I want to do sports that are, you know, physical, and I want to have some fights now and again. And, you know, this is who I am. Oh, well, you're toxic. Well, hang on a minute. That's who I am. That's how I feel. That's what I need. No, you've just, no, you're confused. You don't want that. It's like, well, hang on a minute. We're trusting gay people to say this is how I feel, and then we're supporting them as we should do. We're trusting trans people to say this is how I feel, and we're supporting them as we should do. So how come as a man, when I say this is how I feel, well, I know you're fucking toxic. Well, fuck you. This is how I feel. This is who I am. You know?
Yeah.
And I think that is a big part of the problem, because you've been told. Now, I know that I think you talk about the man in the mirror. I can look in the mirror and I can say I've got flaws, but I try and be a decent person. I try and help other people. So I don't give a fuck if someone calls me toxic or anything like that. And I don't give a fuck what people say. Like, so, you know, when there was that murder and women were saying cancel men and all that stuff, I went on my social media and I was like, women, what do you want from us? And I had some fucking nasty DMs and I had a lot of unfollows. I also had some really good conversations. Mm. Because I can look at myself in the mirror and know that I am a good bloke. I know that I am a good human being. You know, I'm sure you get the same thing through this podcast and, you know, fairly regularly now, I'm very happy to say, I'm very lucky to say that I will get a message from someone saying, you know, such and such that you did help me through a bad time. And that's really important for me, because that is my validation to know that I am a decent human being and that I'm not a piece of shit. Most people don't have that. So I can see how they can easily be tricked into believing that they're a bad person because people on the internet tell them they're a bad person, because they're not having people on the internet tell them they're a good person. You know, we need that back and forth, because we'll all have, I don't care if you're the most confident person in the world, at some point you're going to get rocked by life. And in those moments, you might start to question, you know, yourself. And it doesn't mean that you're flawless as a person. It doesn't mean that you don't fuck up. It doesn't mean like there's very, it's very high chance that in 10 years, I'm going to look back on the stuff that I've been saying now. And I'm going to go say, well, actually in hindsight, I've changed my mind on that. And I've changed my mind on that. And I've changed my mind on that, which is fine. Mm-hmm. You know, but you know, it's being able to stick up for who you are and say, this is who I am. Like, I'm not fucking toxic, you know, and I know I'm not toxic is important to do as an individual level. And I think it's important to do at a societal level as well. And I do think, we are like Western people, we are extremely tolerant. And for years, we've put up with a lot of this stuff going, this is, I don't agree with this, but you know, I'll put up with it because whatever, like let them have their thing. But I think over the last few years, I've seen people go, you know what? We were all for supporting you and all that stuff like that. But you keep telling me I'm a bad person, or you keep saying that we're a bad group of people, and we're not. And we're fucking fed up of it. And now we're going to just, now you forced us to speak up, and now you forced us to stand up for ourselves. And I think that's something, there's a lot of masculinity movements and stuff going around now. And I think, to be honest, I think it's one of the reasons that like beards have become fashionable again. I really do. I think beards have become fashionable because a lot more guys are just like, all right, fine. Like, I'm going to, like, it's a way of, like, a beard doesn't make you a fucking man, obviously. But there is something about it that does make you feel like you're a bit on the American Western frontier and stuff. And there is that, like you're the same kind of age as me, mate. No one had beards when we were growing up. And then the last few years, all of a sudden, boom, beards have become a thing. And I think it's men trying to reclaim.
Might have had a beard if you were George Michael or, you know, someone like
But do you know what I mean? Like, I do think that there's this thing of men trying to reclaim where they can. Because it's like like I said, it doesn't make you a man or not.
No.
But you know, we try and, like, the same way that people will put a picture of them in a mask on their profile picture, if, you know, to try and say that I feel this way, I feel like beards and stuff are kind of like that as well.
Mm. Yeah, and I think the thing is as well is, I talked about this in my conversation with Zuby a few episodes back, and I think the thing is off the back of what happened with Sarah Everard case, I was having conversations. I say loosely conversations because they weren't, but like people would come out with like crazy stuff, and then you'd have.
Kind of thing?
And what I noticed, what happened was that there was what I would call, and I noticed this happening a lot amongst social justice people. There was what I would call fact leapfrogging. So, and I'll explain this a bit, and the penny will probably drop. So, usually when you're having a conversation with someone, you're talking about, you're exchanging dialogue about facts. But what I noticed was happening was that when you would reiterate a set of facts to someone and say, right, okay, the facts are this, what would happen is they would do a fact leapfrog. So they would leap over a set of facts and then another set of facts and then get very quickly to a place of emotion. And that was how the kind of conversations were going. It would be fact versus emotion. And you can't have civil discourse when there's one person is going for the emotional angle and the other person is going for the factual angle. It just doesn't work. And if you're having discourse, you need to. So for instance, I always look at it is where's the end point in this conversation? So men are women's best allies. Women are men's best allies. Men are women's best allies. Okay, the human species of this planet is predicated on men and women working together and getting together. Okay, so there is no benefit for us to be at war with each other. So yeah. It's in everyone's interest.
Most of us are not. But we're made to think that we are.
Yeah. And so, but when you actually approach a conversation with some of these people from that position of what's the solution to this? You know, let's look at the facts and let's actually break this down a little bit. Not all men are serial murderers. Not all men are stalking women at night. Okay. And you start to kind of break it down a little bit. then you can kind of get to a position where you're actually having a logical conversation about this stuff. Yeah. And you can realize that actually men and women, it's in each other's interest to work together, not just for the furtherance of the human species, but also to set an example to the next generation as to how men and women interact. And, you know, but what I found bizarre, and, you know, this is something that keeps coming out, the kind of social justice movement, is that they just want to argue for the sake of argue. Like, there is no end point in this. There's no, well, hang on a minute. What do you think the logical end game of men and women being at war with each other? Is that good for society, or is the logical end game in that a really not a very nice place for our young kids and the next generation? And I spoke to a lady who runs a charity called Lads Need Dads, and there's mentors for kids that have lost their dads, or their dads have been estranged, or whatever, to your point that you made earlier. And these kids, you know, they're 11, 12, 13, 14, they're beginning to notice the hate against kind of against men and boys and dads. And you sort of begin to think, well, hang on a minute, at some point in the future, these lads are going to have to form relationships with girls or women or whatever and stuff. How is this kind of this narrative and backdrop going to begin to impact how men and women form relationships? Because my understanding from speaking to friends who have got kids in their early 20s, young lads, they're really beginning to get quite cautious about entering into relationships. And big time. That's not got to be a good thing going forward, surely.
No, it's not, mate. Like, I had some, you know, like, I was to be totally real about this as well. Like, this is something I've been noticing for a while. You know, people talk about unwanted advances. I remember distinctly a conversation with a friend in California. So he was saying, oh, I was stopped in traffic early, and this guy came over and knocked on my window. And he was trying to give me his phone number, and it freaked me out. And I was like, oh, I've never tried to do that. She goes, oh, if you try to do it, it'd be okay, because you're hot. Her words, not mine. But I just heard so much of that over the years of, like, chicks would love to be approached by guys that they find attractive. But then, and I think, again, the majority of people realize that in order to get approached by people you find attractive, you're also going to get approached by people you don't find attractive. You can't have one without the other. Most people, I think, understand that. But unfortunately, for young, impressionable kids who are just seeing stuff on the TV and stuff, the numbers of that majority are getting smaller. Because, like, I had this young, and he was a young, good-looking guy. I'm sure he was a lovely guy. And he said to me, he was like, well, yeah, okay. Because he said to me, well, people just shouldn't approach people like that anymore. There's no need, because we have dating apps. And I said to him, well, one, someone still has to make the first move. Once you meet up off a dating app, someone still has to make the first move. You know, so there's that. And the other thing is, I was like, how many happy marriages and relationships would have been missed if we worked on the thing of, I can only approach someone through my phone? We said, well, you know, he said, yeah, but that's not worth doing if it means that one person feels uncomfortable. And I'm like, Jesus, I hope not a lot of people thinking this way, because that's just, it's sad. Mm. Instead of saying, like, you know, instead of being like, well, let's get rid of people approaching people. No, let's clamp down on the fucking shitbags who are going too far. Let's clamp down on the guy who a girl says no, and he still tries to fucking get with it. Let's clamp down on that stuff. All the other stuff is going fine. It's like, why are we throwing all of that out? Because some guys are assholes. And it is some guys. It's not all guys. This is, you know, I had, again, you know, you're talking about facts versus, you know, facts versus the emotional arguments. And, you know, I was quite candid. I was saying, like, because if I knew one of my friends had been, and I have had conversations with my friends, and I've actually, I've had friends in the past who we've gone away and they've cheated on their wives, and I've not been friends with that person anymore. And I haven't made a big song and a dance about it, but I'm just like, well, if he cheats on his wife, I can't trust him to be my friend. That to me is a very simple, you know, very simple fucking just observation. Mm. And, you know, I had people say, I had some, you know, women message me saying, well, I have, let's say, five friends who have been sexually assaulted, and you're saying none of your friends have done it. Those facts don't add up. I'm like, yes, they do. You've had five friends over let's say 35 years of your life. That's not one person a year. It's certainly not one the ratios are not 1-to-1 on this. It's perfectly possible that I can have a lot of friends who have never sexually abused a girl. It's perfectly possible that a small percentage of guys account for a very high percentage of the cases. Because the chances are, if a guy thinks it's okay to do it once, he's not going to do it just once in his life. It's going to be a repeat thing. And if a guy's been brought up to think that it's not okay, he's probably going to think that all the way through his fucking life. Mm. You know, so I'm just like, you know, and this is where for me, like, we have to trust. So if I say to someone, look, trust me, I'm telling you that if someone did this, I would not be okay with it. Well, no, you're just protecting your friends. I'm like, well, so if you can't trust my word on this, then why are we even having a conversation? Yeah. You know, and to me, it's like that the guilty until proven innocent thing is a real problem that we are getting in society now. That is, you know, instead of trusting that someone has the best intentions, instead of trusting that someone is telling the truth, we're going to assume that they lie. Why? Because of a small percentage, you know. And again, I say to my, and to be honest, it's usually the ones that haven't traveled much. We live in a patriarchy in the UK. And I want to say to them at that point, you know, what's stopping me right now taking whatever I want from you? Because I'm 210 pounds. You're 100. What's stopping me taking your phone? What's stopping me taking your purse? What's stopping me taking anything I want from you sexually? The only thing that's stopping me is I think it's the wrong thing to do. Not you think it's the wrong thing to do. I think it's the wrong thing to do. And it is the wrong thing to do. Therefore, I don't do it. This idea that we're in a patriarchy where men take what they want is ridiculous. Because if that was the case, men would take what they wanted. Because as I've seen at war, violence is a definitive answer for a lot of things. And the reason we don't do it in this country, most of us, is because we know it's wrong. We don't want to do it. We want equality between men and women. In fact, if you look at the studies carried out by feminist organizations, they actually find out that men are actually usually in higher numbers supportive of equality than women are, you know? And these are feminist organizations that have carried out those that research, you know? And I just say to my, that if you want to see patriarchy, go to Saudi Arabia, go to Egypt, go to most countries around the world and you will actually see patriarchy. We do not have patriarchy in UK. Do we have the kind of the old white guy controlling a lot of institutions? Yes, we do. But that's because they've been in those positions of power. And gradually that is being eroded away, and it will erode away. And like over the last 150 years, in terms of race, in terms of gender, in terms of LGBT rights, the change has been insane. And could it be faster? Yes, it could be. But again, look at how we're doing compared to all of history, you know, and compared to most of the rest of the world. We are doing incredibly well. And these people who want to make us believe that we're not doing well are the ones who are reversing all this progress that we've made. And it's really sad to see, because, you know, most people are good people. I genuinely believe that. Most people trust, they want to live their lives, they want to provide for their family, and they just want to be left alone, is how most people are, I think. And all these movements, be it BLM or these, like these kind of radical feminist movements, all they're doing now is turning the clocks around and making people believe that, and maybe it's gives them meaning, like you were talking earlier. Maybe it gives them meaning. Or maybe it's because these are multi-billion dollar industries and they don't want to let go of their cash cow. And I think that has a lot to do with it as well. When people look at an organization like BLM, and one of the owners has just bought a multi-million dollar house in Topanga Canyon, which is outside of Malibu. And I will tell you, I've been there. It's one of the whitest places you can ever go in your life. It's if you like women that like crystals, go to Topanga Canyon. And you've got to look at that and go, well, these people have, there's a lot of people that are, Reverend Al Sharpton is one of them. All of mainstream media, they have a vested interest in keeping people divided and in keeping people angry. And so does social media. You know, if you or I were to make a post that is very one side of a issue or the other, it will get a lot more engagement than if we go, hey, you know what? like the Israel-Palestine thing right now. If you're like, look, I can see both sides have got some valid points. I can see both sides doing some things that they shouldn't be doing. Let's just agree that killing civilians is bad, whoever's doing it. No one's interested in hearing that. You've got to wave a flag on one side or the other. Yeah. It's almost like, to use a Welsh term,
where we've evolved. I often think that we've kind of evolved to such a degree and we've come forward to such a degree that we're almost kind of devolving backwards at the minute and as kind of human beings. And one thing that I was talking to someone about the other day, you know, talking of kind of the end game in all this, because like you, my barber said to me the other day, my son is like, I think he's 20 or 21. And he said, oh, can't you get a number? And he's like, Dad, you can't do stuff like that anymore, which again, kind of blew my mind. But
you can do it. Just go and do it. And she'll probably like it.
But what worries me about all this, Garen, is that this is all pointing towards an over-sanitization of society, not just for men and women and not just in how we relate as men and women, but how we relate as society. And there's people that are beginning to push back against this. You know, I heard that Douglas Murray is making a film with a couple of other guys, which is coming out very soon, which is going to be about this whole, you know, social justice movement. But like one of the things, like if you go to like any country in the summer, you know, be it Italy, Spain, or any sort of country in Europe, one of the most beautiful things you can see is a young couple courting, a man and a woman, or a girl and a guy, or it could even be two girls or two guys, whatever. But seeing two people romantically courting is one of the most beautiful things that you can see. And the idea that we're going to get to such a point that this kind of interaction is sanitized to a degree where, you know, they're going to get like a little contract or an app out on their phone before they actually say, oh, are you all right with me putting my arm around you? Are you all right with me kissing you? You know, the idea that a human interaction that has evolved over thousands of years is going to be sanitized to that point is, you know, that's a step, but that is a wholesale step backwards in, you know. Gents, I'm going to jump in here quite quickly. Now, if you're a regular listener, you may or may not know that this year I formed an exclusive brotherhood of dads called the Dad Circle. And some of the men who have joined are making some remarkable changes to their lives, their physical health, mental health, and relationships, accomplishing things that they didn't think were possible for them before joining. As a member, you get access to a proven system of self-improvement, daily accountability check-ins to keep you on track, and weekly team calls, monthly topics and challenges. Not to mention a bunch of other dads encouraging you and cheering you along the way. Now, if this sounds like something that you would benefit from and you want to check it out, then you can do so over at www.thedadcircle.com/join. That's thedadcircle.com/join. If you're driving right now or doing something, do a pause, rewind a few seconds and jot the link down. Then go and check it out. If that wasn't enough, right now you can try it out for £1. That's just £1 for your first 7 days. I can't say fairer than that. £1 could be the best investment you ever make. So try it out today.
And I've got to be honest, mate. Like, it's something that I'm glad that I'm 37 now. So I think I've been through the horn dog phase. I've been through it. And I'm glad that, because now if I see any red flags with a girl, I will just say, you know what? This isn't worth it. I'm just not going to like bother. 10 years ago, my dick would have said, nah, mate, you're getting in there. No matter what. And like, and in the current environment, that could like, you could very easily have somebody make allegations about you. And there doesn't need to be any substance about it. But people will then say, well, there's no smoke without fire. Sometimes people are just fucking vindictive. And sometimes people are fucking psycho. I hate to break it to people. There's a lot of fucking lunatics out there. and like, male and female. You know, there are some people are bad people. Some people are lunatics. You know, believe every woman. Why? Some women fucking liars. Like, you know, there's some people are bad people, regardless of what genitalia they have. You know, believe all women is ridiculous. Like, what? Because someone has a vagina, they're automatically more truthful. I've been cheated on by a partner. A lot of my friends have been cheated on by a partner. I fucking believe that she said she was a fucking liar. Like, you know, it's a, there's a lot of this stuff. It's just, we're working from a false kind of premise to begin with. The idea that, oh, well, women don't lie. Or they're all men, or men are, or, you know, all men are naturally kind of, what you call it, toxic. You know, like, we're working from false premises to begin with. So everything that's built on that then is faulty. Because, you know, we're working from those kind of, you know, incorrect ideas. And I agree with you, mate. Like, look, I'm at the point now, I'm jaded, my heart is black. I'm never going to be one of those romantic people that's on holiday in Spain again. But I agree with, like, those people, like, those moments are some of the best moments in a person's life. And this, and that is life. That stuff is life. You know, I actually get on with my exes, unlike most people, because I don't blame anyone for anything they've done in life, because I've made some fucking massive mistakes in life. And it's only because I've had a gracious family and friends who allowed me to and forgive me mistakes that I still have those family and friends. So I don't hold anything against bad relationships, because I'm like, you know what? Yeah, you did make a mistake, but I also know that you had reasons for making your mistake. And you're a fucking human being, and I'm a human being. So let's be fucking friends. We had some good times. Let's be friends. And that's the way I think, that's the way I look at, you know, relationships and stuff. And that's the way I try and look at, you know, things with strangers. It's like, yeah, we have made mistakes. Have the British population, has Britain as a country made mistakes in the past? Yeah, it has. Let's own them. Let's learn from them, move on. Was slavery a terrible idea? Fucking was a terrible idea. It was horrible. We learned lesson. We moved on. You know, and I think that this forgiveness, and also the acceptance that we all make mistakes is absolutely crucial for a healthy society. And we've gone to this thing now of, well, the guilty until proven innocent. That is a, like, you can't have a healthy society with that. You can't have a healthy society where you always suspect the worst motives of somebody. And you can't have a healthy society where you're pitting groups of people against each other and saying, all men are after this, or all white people are after this, or all black people think this way. It's fucking ridiculous. You know, like, we can't have a healthy society that way. And I genuinely believe that over the last few years, I do think our society has gone backwards in terms of relations between different demographics, in terms of the freedoms that we have as individuals, and outlook. You know, I would say an amateur historian. I study history at university. I write about historical periods. It's what I'm interested in. I post pictures of my to read pile sometimes. If you go through that to read pile, it's 99% history. And one thing that I look at is, I think, you know, the chances are that what you and me grew up in the 80s and the 90s and the last kind of 10 years, oh, sorry, the early 2000s, that was a blip in human history. That amount of freedom, that amount of upward mobility, you know, because fucking you could buy a house as a postman, no problems. You know, you're like, everyone had houses. Everyone could buy a house. You could have two cars on the drive. There was peace in Western Europe, which is something that's never existed. It just never, like, we've never had peace in Western Europe really up until like the end of the Second World War, you know, and you look at things, we haven't had major state on state wars. And if you put it in if you were an accountant and you were looking at the charts of all these things in human history, you would go, that was an outlier. And I'm worried that we are at the end of an outlier period in human history. If you look around the world, most places are sliding back towards autocracy or totalitarianism. Even the Western countries, Canada, Australia, Britain, America, were dependent on what state you're in to a certain extent. All of them are, like, you can't say that we're free anymore. You just can't. You'd have to be absolutely bonkers to be able to say that we're free when it's been illegal for you to go on holiday. It's been illegal for you to go see your family and friends. You know, who saw that coming? And if you look at the way that these identity politics are being trumped up. You know, again, I read a lot of history. I tell you this, never works out well when you start fucking vilifying one group. It ends in genocide or it ends in war. It never ends in any other way other than that. And the seeds that we're sowing now, we might not see them, we might not see them reaped in our lifetimes. And I don't think, to be honest, we will see most of them reaped. I do think that the tail end of this thing is going to be long enough that we see a lot of change in our life. But I don't think we're going to see the worst outcomes of it. But if you've got kids now, I think that they might see the worst outcomes in their lifetime. I do think that this division that's being sown now, and technology is not going away. The media is not going away. I do generally I worry towards what's going to happen towards the back end of the century.
Yeah, and I touched upon this. Funny enough, I touched upon this very subject with Alex Patacos, who was Viktor Frankl's mentee. And I said to him, I said, what do you think Frankl would have thought about this? You know, this whole idea that, you know, arguably the position he was in the concentration camps he was in, you know, that was a definition of oppression underneath, you know, the Nazis, and just, you know, understanding kind of what is happening right now and people claiming that they're oppressed when they're not. I mean, I struggle when someone living in Western Europe or Western society claims to be oppressed, knowing what we know to have gone on, you know, in the 1930s and World War II, you know, under the Nazis and other regimes throughout the last 100 years. But it just, what's weird about what's happening at the minute, Garen, is that people just seem to have such short bloody memories at the minute about how it wasn't a long time ago that this stuff was going on. And, you know, and I speak to suppliers of mine in Belgium and Holland and stuff and that. And for these guys, you know, their grandparents would have remembered the SS troops storming into their towns and villages and stuff. And, you know, and trying to reconcile that with what is kind of going on, particularly, you know, I wouldn't say I'm a full-scale conspiracy theorist, but I will say that there is a massive amount of stuff that's happened in the last 18 months, which just simply just doesn't add up. You know, you can put a kind of, you can put a gloss on a lot of it.
Yeah, you can say it's incompetent.
There's tons of stuff that just does not add up.
Like, yeah. And look, mate, I think with the oppressed stuff and the freedom stuff is, I do think that there is oppression and things going on, but it's not where people are told it's coming from. It's not black and white or anything like that. It's the ultra wealthy and the majority of people. And look, I'm not socialist by any means. Like, I believe in real capitalism. I believe in businesses being allowed to fail. I believe in businesses being allowed to grow. What we have at the moment is this thing of, well, yeah, we're capitalist, but we're going to bail out this big bank. We're going to bail out this airline, but we're going to make you shut for a year for your business. That's not fucking capitalism. It's fucking cronyism. I don't believe in that shit. But, you know, there is oppression going on, and it's from our own governments. Like, it might be a good idea for people to stay at home, right? And if that is my thing is, if you can't convince someone to do something, that's on you, not on that person. So if I'm trying to convince people, like, look, I think it's a great idea to listen to podcasts, I think it's a great idea to read, if they don't do that, I can't then go and fucking lock that person in a fucking room and force them to listen to a podcast. That's on me for failing to convince them that it's a good idea to do it. So the same with like lockdown. If you can't convince people using facts and using reason to stay in their homes, then that's on you, not them. So we have had like freedoms taken away from us. And, you know, I think I'm very big on the whole kind of like consent thing. Like, I would have probably consented to staying in my house most of last year because I would say, you know what? I don't need the clubs to be open or anything like that. We'll wait for a vaccine for all people and stuff. No problem. But if I'd have been in the mental space I was in 2015-16, I think I would have taught myself last year. I don't think I would have been able to get through that if I was going through what I went through in those years. Mm. I should not have had to have broken the law to go and see friends, because it was friends and family that got me through 2015-2016. So if I was going through that now, I would have had to have broken the law to save my own life. That's fucking insane, you know. And I agree that it was important to give guidelines. It's important to give information. But if people think like, you know what? No, I need to go and see my friends. And I tell you this, mate, when I have seen my friends, I have felt like a different person for the next couple of weeks. I really fucking have done. And I'm somebody who has a pretty strong mental schedule in place now to keep me on, mental practices to keep me on schedule. Like, so, you know, if my mind starts to get a bit fucking crazy, I know where to go for my meditation. I'm working out every day. I try and get outdoors every day. I've got all that in place. Don't think most people do. So, you know, I know as well from having had incidents in my life that have affected me for decades, I know as well that you don't just go through what you've gone through the last year and then be like, all right, back to normal. Not going to happen, especially with young people. What's happened to young people now? You know, you were talking earlier about this romantic idea about, you know, the two people courting. People have been made to fear other people. That doesn't just go away. And then you add on this, all the other stuff. Oh, everyone's racist. Oh, everyone's misogynist. Oh, everyone's a rapist. You add all this stuff on top of that. And our society has just been telling people to fear everybody else. And we live in an age where you don't really have to leave your house. A lot of people can work from home. Some people just don't work and they, you know, they don't need to. They will get, you know, they will get benefits, whatever. You can order your food through a phone. You can live through your phone. You can live through the TV. I genuinely worry that a lot of people are just going to choose this kind of isolationist life because they've been terrified into choosing anything else.
Yeah. But the thing is that's not, and I did, again, it's something I discussed here before, reference the Blue Zones and other studies that are being made. Loneliness and like not having people around you, you know, connection and that isolation, that's the biggest killer. That's that affects your longevity, that affects your health, you know, all of these things that we know because studies have been done on this. I had Robin Dunbar on, evolutionary anthropologist from Oxford University, and he was saying to me, you know, The studies that they're doing on the cutting edge of this connection research at the moment all points to the fact that you are going to live longer, you will have healthier lives if you have strong human connections with people, which means congregating in groups, which means hugging one another, which means man hugs, which means women hugs, and there is a biochemical reaction that goes on, and your body releases oxytocin. It's called the hugging hormone because that's what it bond. It's a bonding ritual, and I agree. If we're going to get out of the habit of doing this, it's and not being able to be tactile or feeling uncomfortable with being tactile, it's not a good thing for longevity, mental health, or even physical health either. So, and that's what the studies are showing.
If I was running, we got Chester Zoo, it's not that far from here. If I was running Chester Zoo and I took one chimpanzee and I separated it from the others, one, that chimpanzee, we all know is going to go downhill quickly, but also people would be in an uproar. How dare you put that chimpanzee on its own? That's inhumane, you know? And we are apes. People forget that we are an animal and an ape. People forget that. Like, and that's what's so crazy about it. It's just like, we forget that we are an animal which has animal needs. We need connection. We need to be around other, you know, we need to be in a group. We will fear other animals. We will fear other tribes. The more we break down our tribe, the more we will fear other tribes. And I'm like, this stuff is not hidden knowledge. We know all of this. You know, what good has ever come of isolating people? We put people in solitary confinement in prisons and in Guantanamo Bay and places to torture them. Like, we torture, we use this stuff. We know it's a punishment. What do you do? Well, I don't know what people do these days, but what did we used to do to kids to punish kids? Go to your room. You're separating from other people. This is not like, this is not hidden knowledge. We know that it's a bad thing to hide other people. When do you feel your best? When you're with other people, when you're playing sports, when you like, especially sports or especially kind of competition, and you're winning with your friends, there's nothing better. That's the best feeling on the world, to win. Why do we all watch sports? Because we get to tag along on that winning team.
Mm.
That's why we do it. You know, and to be honest, when they put sports back on, I think that was one of the best decisions that they made, because it did then give people something to be like, I'm connecting with these people. I can pretend that I'm part of that team and stuff. But it just blows my mind, mate, because none of this stuff is, it's like, as I say, it's not rocket science. It's really not. And, you know, I feel like absolute shit recently. I get a lot of people messaging me like, oh yeah, I'm really down in the dumps. I don't know what's up with me. I know what's up with you. You haven't been allowed to see anybody for fucking months. You know, they're like, oh, I'm thinking about going on to this medication and that. No, just go see your fucking friends. You know, it's mad. It's mad, mate. That's the thing.
Which speaks to the point of the, you know, we were talking about the internal journey that you go on within yourself. People have, you know, again, it's been, you know, I've heard you talk about this as well. You know, they prioritized all the stuff that is unhealthy for you, and all the stuff which I would term as kind of things that sedate how you're feeling mentally. Mm-hmm. They've supplemented all those and given people more of those at the same time as taking away all the stuff that actually kind of makes them feel good, like working out and mixing with people and
100%.
having contact with. And this is going to sound really callous. And I know that the people that are listening to my podcast will know exactly what I mean by this. But 2020, 2021 was survival of the fattest, not survival of the fittest. Mm. And evolution is predicated, you know, I talked about this already, evolution is predicated on the premise of natural selection and survival of the fittest. Now, if we're actually going to, again, sort of turn around and flip this on its head and say, oh, actually, no, sod that, what we're just going to do is allow people to make really bad health choices and not look after themselves on the basis that there will always be a magic pill to come along, which is going to save the day, sort of thing. Again, what does that say to society? Does it say to we should look after our mental and physical health, or does it say, well, actually, there is always going to be a pill to save you?
We're really the only species that kind of that does bring along the weakest members. We've done it for a long time. You know, we do carry along the weakest members. Like what we do, a lot of our actions are not what you would do if you were looking at it dispassionately. Because like, if you were dispassionately looking at the last year, you would have just gone, you know what, fuck all the fatties, they're holding us back. And they are, in a lot of ways. I'm just going to be honest about it. Like, because one of the things that winds me up is people saying, oh, well, my weight doesn't impact other people. Of course it does, especially in the UK. We only have a certain amount of money for the NHS. Every obesity-related treatment is preventable. Every obesity-related medication is preventable. So when somebody says my weight does not affect other people, that's lies. And also, if you're obese, the chances are you're eating that food in front of your kids. So you're setting bad examples for your kids. You're probably feeding the same stuff to your kids, let's be honest. So this whole, oh, it doesn't affect other people, absolute bollocks. You know, that being said, I understand how people can become obese, because you're up against a multi-billion dollar industry that's telling you to eat this stuff. There's stuff in the food that is addictive. I fucking love burgers, mate. I would love to eat burgers all day. The reason I don't isn't because I don't want to. It's because I know the downside that comes from it. You know, so I don't blame people for being obese. But what I do blame people is like, look, if you're not willing to look after your own health, don't then get mad at other people like saying, oh, these people are selfish because they want to go, you know, they want to go running while COVID's on or whatever. It's like, well, one, you know, you don't know what that person needs. So maybe that person needs to go running every day, or their mental health really suffers. Two, then being physically fit benefits everyone, because then it's like they're more likely to not require the NHS, which means more money for, you know, everybody else. So, you know, we should be celebrating fitness. We should be celebrating people that want to get outdoors, and we vilified it. And again, a lot of people know that they need the outdoors. A lot of people know that they need exercise, but they just hate confrontation. So over the last year, they have been cowed into not doing it. You know, the kind of example I use on this, because I know, you know, you've had Zuby on the podcast. I've heard him say this. Oh, nobody's ever said anything to me about not wearing a mask. Well, because you're a pretty big dude, you know, and like when the times I haven't had a mask, because my thing with a mask, mate, is I know that most people are, I'll just say it, not very researched. So if they see you without a mask, they think that they're going to die in the next 3 minutes. And so I will put one on just because I don't want some old lady to have a panic attack because I'm not wearing a mask, right? So that's kind of the way I see it. But on the times that I've not had one, no one said anything to me. Why? Probably because I'm 210 pounds, I got a beard, right? But my mum, when she's done something wrong in the shop, she's been shouted at by the little Hitlers in there. And that's the thing. See, a lot of people are, and I just like, most people I do believe are good, but there's a lot of people that leaves a lot of people that aren't good. And they are loving this opportunity to shout at people. They are loving this opportunity to say, I'm better than you. I call it a minimum effort heroism. You know, we like, oh, I stood 6 feet apart from someone in the shop. I'm like, when I went to the co-op by my house, they have this repeating message on, really Orwellian. Thank you for being a local hero and observing social distancing. So from just standing in a couple of meters back from someone, I'm a fucking hero now, am I? But by telling people they're heroes for staying on their sofas, like by telling people that they're heroes for not going outside, by telling people they're heroes for ordering takeaways and all this stuff, you know, you are feeding what people, everyone wants to be the fucking hero. No one wants to be the villain. So you're telling those people like, oh, well, I would go and exercise, but it's selfish. You know, I'm not selfish. I don't want the gyms to be open. No, you don't want the gyms to be open because you're fucking lazy. You know, you don't want your workplace to be open because you're fucking lazy. But the government have very cleverly made people think that they're actually heroes for having that stuff. You know, so it's very clever, mate. The mental manipulation that's gone on. I mean, it always happens. You know, there's always manipulation going on to some degree. But what's happened over the last year is, you know, all you've got to do, right, is we care about health. Okay, let's look at your actions. You closed the gyms. You had ad campaigns running saying how runners are more likely to have COVID. What? You know, you had you tax sports supplements, but you're allowing KFC and all these places to not only be open but run ridiculously cheap deals. Where people are, they're in their cars, but you're still sending loads of people to the same place and they have a face-to-face interaction with. So if the person at the front of the drive-thru line has COVID, he probably passes it on to the person he's dealing with and they're probably going to pass it on to everyone, right? But that's all okay. So you look at their words, compare it to their actions, take you 2 minutes to do, and you go, you know what? They're not doing what they're saying they're doing. But people are not willing to do that. And I think it's because we all like to, mate, I'll put myself on the fucking spot with this one. I am a believer in people having access to drugs and people being able to do drugs without criminality. I believe that. But I am also someone, I'll put my hands up and say, I have abused drugs. And there's been times where I would have been like, you need this. Though, you know, I know you don't want to be spending all this money and time doing these drugs, but you need this to get through what you're going through. You need this. Fucking bollocks. Lying to myself. So I've done it too. So I'm not saying I'm immune from this from anything, but we all do that, mate. We lie to ourselves on a daily basis. You know, we'll say something like, oh, well, I couldn't do that last rep. I didn't want to hurt my shoulder. No, it was just hurting. You've just been a wimp. You know, like we just lie on a daily basis. Oh, I haven't got time to go for a run. Yeah, you have. Just go to bed half an hour later. Have half an hour less sleep. You have got time to go for a run. You just don't want to go for a run. You know, and we make these excuses up all the time. So I get it. But at the same time, we have to have this self-awareness as a nation to say, is this truly what, like, are we truly matching up our actions with our intentions here? And we just haven't been.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the thing is virtue signaling has become like like an art form in the last 12 months. I didn't even know what virtue signaling was 18 months ago.
And then why do you need to have a mask on your profile picture? Why would someone have a mask on? Sorry to interrupt, mate, but I'm on a rant now. Why would someone have a profile picture to show your face, right? To show who you are or to show your business logo. Why would anyone put a mask on there other than to virtue signal? And I'm not anti-mask at all, but why would you have a mask on your face on a profile picture? You know, we're talking about evolution. We've been evolved to, you and I are doing this call on Zoom so that we can see each other's faces as we talk, because it's so important to who we are as human beings to have that. You know, there's, so why would you have a fucking mask on your profile picture? It's only for one reason. So everybody knows that you're pro-mask. I saw a lot of comments recently on the Biden tweet. People saying, you know, because he's saying you don't have to have masks anymore in businesses if you're fully vaccinated. People saying, well, I'm still going to wear my mask because I don't want people to think I'm Republican. What kind of fucked up thinking is that?
Yeah, it is mental. And I think the thing is I think it's people don't, and again, to what we were talking about earlier on, you know, when I said about, I think that, you know, guys have got to be able to own their own minds and be able to say what they think and not be scared of saying what they think and stuff. It's all part and parcel of that. It's easier just to go with the flow and virtue signal than actually stick out and say, well, actually, let's apply a bit of critical thinking to this and emotional intelligence and actually be kind of sensible about this and stuff. But it's just like, we could go for a good 3 hours.
Well, what I just want to say on that one is it doesn't even need to be that virtue signaling thing. It doesn't need to be, I disagree with everything about it. It just needs to be like, you know what? I see some holes in this. So it's like the mask thing. I don't agree with mask mandates, but I do see reasons why in some cases masks are a good idea. It doesn't have to be one or the other.
Yeah.
You know, just, and it's the same as the dating thing. It doesn't need to be that no man should ever be able to approach a woman. It should just be, just fucking use your sense. Read the situation. If someone says no, it's a fucking no. Like, I think the big word with all this is consent. If someone said, like, because I'll turn it into a veteran thing. We had a thing recently we discussed on the podcast. Is it okay to ask a veteran if they ever killed anyone? It's consent. You can ask somebody and then they can say, I don't want to talk about that. And then you don't talk about it. You know, we're not mind readers. We have to, like, in order to find boundaries and in order to grow boundaries, we need to test boundaries. And you can't do that if you're terrified of offending someone or if you're terrified of being canceled or something. You know, we need to be allowed to make mistakes, we need to be allowed to fail. You know, you can't grow without failure. None of us would get anywhere in business, in the fitness, you know, in relationships. You know, things have to be tried and failed.
Yeah.
And not allowing people to do that, I think, is criminal.
And also, yeah, it's exercising just common sense around stuff as well, isn't it? I know it's common. If it was so common, people wouldn't. It wouldn't be so difficult. Yeah. But like, I was talking about mental health on my group last week, and we were talking about, because my big thing is kind of around mental health, is that it's okay to talk, but depending on what you're going through, you're probably not going to talk to someone about it, because if you've got like dark intrusive thoughts, like someone says to me, I've been in a dark place. Jordan Peterson says these are dark places. When he talks about his friend Chris, and he says Chris was in a dark place, that is code word for me that those thoughts are that intrusive that they don't want to talk about them in public. So for instance, for instance, with like mental health, if you're talking about that in terms of consent on how you discuss mental health things with guys, if a guy says to me, I was in a dark place, he doesn't need to tell me what his specific thoughts were he was having. If, when he says dark, I know what that means because I've been there myself. So yeah. I know what that means, but I think it's, this is why I think the mental health discussion gets kind of protracted, because people say, oh, you need to talk. But in actual fact, if you're having those kind of thoughts, you probably don't want to talk to someone like your wife or your friend about it, because your worry will be that they're going to send you to the loony bin and lock it and throw away the key.
And that's fine though, mate. Because this thing is, it's like, it could be enough to just say to someone like, look, I'm like, if someone comes up to you and says like, I want to lose weight, I don't need to know exactly how much weight they need to lose. Like, I don't need to know the specifics. I don't need to know what waist size they want to be or what. I'll just be like, well, these are the things that work for losing weight. So if someone's like, my mental health is suffering, I don't need to know exactly what your mental health is. I don't need to know the contents. If you want to tell me about what you're thinking, and if that'll help, fine. But I don't need to know that. But I guarantee that these will help you. Meditation, be outside, exercise, get good people around you, find purpose. I guarantee that those things will help you, no matter what your intrusive thoughts are, or no matter where you're struggling, or if you had, if you had problems with a relationship, or you had problems with your children, or if you had problems with your workplace or whatever, those things will help you regardless. You know, the same way as if someone wants to lose weight, doesn't matter if they're going from 300 to 200 pounds, doesn't matter if they're going from 150 to 100, or if they're whatever their waist size is, or how fast they can run, all those things do not matter. All that matters is this is the formula, and the formula will work regardless. And I agree, mate. I think, you know, when someone's like, oh, I'm going to have an issue, he's just like, right, bare your soul. Tell us all the details. And people are like, fuck that. I don't want to do that. And why would you? And people don't need to know the details, you know, like, so I think that's an important thing to know, mate. It's just like, you know, it's this, the same thing as going to a restaurant. You can order everything on the menu, or you can order one or two little things, and it's going to be different for everyone.
Yeah, I agree. It's been a wicked conversation with you tonight, and I've not even mentioned military once, I've not even mentioned books once, I've not even mentioned DJing, so we're gonna have to get that into another conversation at some point, mate. for sure. If people want to link up with you, message you, find out about what you've got coming up in the next little while, what is the best way for them to do so, sir?
At GRJ Books, everywhere, on social media, or Veteran State of Mind, if people want to look, check out the podcast and stuff. If you just Google GRJ Books or Veteran State of Mind, then I should come up.
All right. You're going to love this last question. And the problem is, because I know you've been listening to some of my podcasts. Garrett, what is it in life that gives you meaning, sir?
Mate, you know what? This is something that I can't give a straight answer on, because it will change all the time. But I will say, as I am getting older and there's more gray hairs coming in the beard, that honestly, service to other people is like, a lot of other stuff will bring happiness. A lot of other stuff will get me out of bed in the morning. But if we're talking about meaning, then it's those moments of service to other people.
I love it. I love it. It's been a pleasure speaking to you this evening, sir. I'm glad that you've given me the time. I'm very privileged to have you on the podcast and talking to me this evening. I'm glad we linked up. It took a little while, but an excellent conversation, sir. Thank you very much.
I enjoyed it. Part two, whenever you're up for it. I'm always ready, always up for a chat, mate. But thanks Definitely. For having me on. I appreciate the chat, mate.
Definitely. Cheers, man. Take care.
Cheers, Joe. Thanks, buddy.
A big thanks to Geraint for joining me. There'll be a follow-up coming later in the year to our conversation. As you can hear, we hit it off, and we're looking forward to putting something else down. We're not too sure what the subject's going to be yet, but definitely keep your eyes peeled, because there will be a second installment of the conversation we had today. If you want to check him out, he's on Instagram and Facebook at GRJ Books. That's his handle. His podcast is Veteran State of Mind, which is on all the usual podcast players. And he has some fascinating conversations and guests over there. If anything resonated from this episode, hit him up on Instagram. He's always on there. He'll respond to your comments. Some of his content is quite colourful, as we discussed in this conversation today. Now, one of the reasons I had Geraint on was because, having been put onto him by a previous guest, his content really resonates with me. And if you have a look at his content, he says a lot of the stuff that people are not prepared to say anymore. And some people don't like that. But a lot of people, and in fact, an increasingly amount of people, actually do like that. They do like the fact that he doesn't beat about the bush in terms of what he thinks about very kind of contentious topics right now. So he doesn't mince his words, particularly about the difficult things which other people feel unable or unwilling to confront, which is what we did in the conversation today. Not being able to discuss stuff being off limits, is a problem for society right now, both inside and outside of intimate relationships. And we delved into this, and we delved into why this is such a problem for society. And combining this with a number of other factors, like lockdowns, has created an extremely isolationist society that we're living in right now. So hopefully our discussion has enabled you to see yourself in a different light, you know, how you react to different situations in your life, how you cope with mistakes, how you bounce back from mistakes, how you accept yourself and the faults of other people. Perhaps it's given you the confidence to begin to say what you really think and to stop worrying about offending people. There's also a video of this interview over on the Guild of Dads YouTube channel, and you can link up with me over on Twitter, Instagram or Facebook using the handle @GuildofDads. I'd love to hear what you think about the episode, whether it resonated, whether you agree with some of the stuff, whether you don't agree with it. Reach out and get in touch. I'm teaching you how to follow a simple system and plan, just like many of my guests, in order to transform all areas of your life so that you can live more purposefully with much greater fulfillment and meaning. At the same time as becoming the man and dad you always wanted to be. It's all in my ebook, The Dad Blueprint. You can grab it free at guildofdads.com/dad. That's dad in capital letters, D-A-D. In order to have a positive impact on the world, we improve ourselves and inspire others. The fee for this show is that you share it with others so that they may benefit from anything you find useful or interesting. If you like the conversations that we have, if you know someone that could do with improving their relationships, could do with a life rethink or different perspective, share this episode with them. The best bit, you don't have to tell them why you're sharing it with them, but it could be just what they need to hear. Now, the podcast, as I said, is growing. We're getting more listeners week in, week out. We're getting more people and dads in particular resonating with what we talk about on here, the subjects we discuss. And so if it does resonate with you, it would really mean a lot to me if you could rate and review the podcast, particularly on Apple Podcasts or whatever your podcast player of choice is, even subscribe to it. And I want to thank you guys that are getting behind what I'm doing here. We also have a growing Facebook group over on Facebook, Guild of Dads Facebook group. There's some fascinating discussions over there. Again, that's growing with guys that want to talk about different subjects and want to improve themselves and the way in which they show up to the world as a role model to the next generation. Hopefully, you find something insightful in every episode to share with dad you know. And in the meantime, live a life of vision, action, and meaning. Apply what you hear, and we'll see you next time.